Blog Talk Radio.
Password is tractor.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Mana Pro Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Wednesday, April 18th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We got a great show lined up for you today. It is the 3rd Wednesday, the third Wednesday of the month, which of course means it's Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Today's topic is going to be planting a perennial garden. Planting a perennial garden. And this is great because our neighbors who live right behind us, for years, his father and now him, they have a huge, huge, huge daylily bed. And they were, in fact, they were out working it and weeding it last week. And I asked them about them, and they said that they were getting a little frustrated because it just gets so overgrown so much. And I mentioned I had might like to have a few, and they said, come on down. So as soon as they bloom out, I'll kind of take a look at which ones that Jen and I think are most attractive, if you will. And then we're going to dig up some from our neighbor, and we're going to put them on a little bank along the road just on the other side of our fence that we just put up. So we're definitely looking forward to that. And so today's topic, Garden Wise Living with Arlena, is going to be planting a perennial garden. And of course, we'll ask her when she gets here what was her choice of wine today. She always has to be sipping on a few glasses of wine during the show to get her through. So that's always fun, and it keeps the show lively as well. So we'll ask her that here in a few minutes. Want to remind everybody that, again, you can nominate your local school, local, private, or public school for our Chicken Coops for Classrooms giveaway. Yep, we're having a right smack dab in the middle of this contest. In fact, it's going to end. We will stop taking nominations. We will stop taking nominations the last day of April, April 30th at midnight. And we're going to actually announce the winner and call the school live on the air on Friday, May the 4th. So we're definitely looking forward to that. And you can nominate your local public or private school to win this tremendous prize package. We've got fertile hatching eggs. Okay, fertile hatching eggs in this prize package. We've got an incubator. We've got a brooder. We've got a chicken coop and lots of educational books, so they can put them in the library after they are done reading them, or for all the kids to be able to check out. It's a tremendous prize package, thanks to our sponsors. And one lucky school is going to win this awesome, awesome prize package. And you need to nominate your local school. And it's very easy to do that. It won't take very long, I'm telling you. And how cool would it be to have this great prize package be delivered to a local school right down the street from you? So let me tell you how to enter this Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. All you have to do is send me an email. How easy is that? contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay? contest@chickenwhisperer.net. In the subject line of the email, put Chicken Coop Contest. That's it. Chicken Coop Contest. Then, within the email itself, we need the school name, the school address, the school phone number, and then if you'll jot down a few sentences about why you think this school is deserving of this great prize package, then you've entered them. That's what we need. For example, they already have a recycle program. They already have raised bed gardens. They already have compost bins. They already hatch chicks out, but the chicks normally go to the local farmers, and they would love to be able to keep a few there to maintain on a regular basis. All these great things. What is the school already doing to be sustainable in its existence? So just give us that information, and it is that simple. Local, public, or private school for the Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. This is the third or fourth one we've done. Fabulous. We love doing this, and the schools get so excited when they learn that they're going to win this great prize package from our sponsors. So we're right smack dab in the middle of that. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow we've got Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD, poultry scientist, professor of poultry science at Delaware State University. She'll be joining us tomorrow. And then I'm trying to probably no show on Friday, just to let you know. No Fun Friday show this Friday because of things we've got going on here. The film crew will be here from the network A&E. And so I think they're planning on being here between 11:30 and 2:30, I believe, is when they're going to be filming. So well, there'll be no radio show this Friday, but hopefully I'll have some time over the weekend to have some fun contest on our Facebook and Twitter pages. So we'll make up for the prizes that we don't give away on Friday for Fun Friday, then we'll try to give them later. Let's see. Yeah, let me just real quick, we'll talk about this, what to use in the run of your an uncovered run as far as bedding, and then how often do you have to replace them. So I'm going to go over this because I think we have a a newbie in the chat room has got some questions, and so I'm just going to answer this one real quick. And then we'll get on to some other things. But she asked, or he asked, what bedding should I use out in the run? Not specifically in the coop, but in the run. And because the run, in most all cases, is out in the weather, it's going to get rained on, snowed on, wind, hard sun, things like that. We've used a lot of things over the years, and I'll just tell you what we do. And a lot of people do this, and they found that it works really well for them. Okay. We prefer to use wood chips. Now, let me kind of go back a little bit and tell you about three times a year how we go through and replace them and really prepare our run that works fabulous, okay? About three times a year, what we'll do is we'll get the garden tiller into the run. And we're going to till that run about, you know, 6, 7, 8 inches deep. However deep that tiller or your tiller that you have can till down, we're actually going to... Well, thank you very much, Midnights, for that great comment in the chat room. So we'll get the garden tiller right into the chicken run, and we'll till that down about 6 to 8 inches deep with the tiller, real, real good. Okay, we'll put the tiller up. Then we'll get a good old metal rake, and we'll get in there and rake all that as smooth as possible. You know, rake it all out from the tiller. Then what we do is we're either going to use one of two things. We're going to use lime, and not a lot of it, but we're going to use either pulverized lime or powdered lime. You don't see it labeled powdered lime much anymore. Most of the time it'll say pulverized, but either pulverized lime or powdered lime. Now, you don't want to use a whole lot of this because, of course, your chickens aren't going to be walking on it anyway, but if you use a lot of deep lime and then just let your chickens walk on it, it can burn their feet just like it can burn our hands, just direct contact with that for a length of time. So we're going to fix that problem, but we've done this for years and it works great. Okay, so once we've tilled the run about 6 to 8 inches deep, okay, with the tiller, put that up. Then we'll rake it out with a metal rake real good, nice and smooth. Then we'll either spread out pulverized or powdered lime, I would say probably about a half inch, a quarter to a half inch of lime. We'll open the bags and spread the lime out with our rake. This really helps with absorption and the odor and things like that. Spread it out all over the run real thin with the rake. Now, another product we've used in the past as well is called, they have it packaged. ManaPro has small shaker bottles of it called Coop and Compost. But if you're going to use it for your run, it's also labeled in your garden, I'm sorry, in your feed and seed stores. Most all of them carry it. It's called Sweet, like candy, Sweet PDZ. That's P as in Paul, D as in David, Z as in zebra. Sweet PDZ, and it's basically labeled as horse stall refresher, and it comes in, I don't know, maybe a 30-pound bag, 40-pound bag, and it's granular. It's all natural. It comes from the earth to begin with. And we'll spread that around because that also absorbent as far as moisture and odors as well. But if you go with the lime, it's probably a little bit less expensive regarding that. Sweet PD, since it's a little bit more and it works great, I'll save that for inside the coop and the nest boxes and whatnot, maybe the compost bin. So since you're doing, depending on the size of your run, I would just go with the powdered lime or the pulverized lime. So once that lime is spread all out nice and thin, okay, don't want it too thick, again, maybe half inch to a quarter inch to half inch of lime, then we're actually going to do the wood chips. Now, I have found in our area, and any area that I've talked to people, that these tree services that come and prune trees, cut trees down, remove trees, they would be more than happy to give you free wood chips. Now, here's the bonus here. Let's say you live in a subdivision and your neighbor's getting a couple of pine trees taken down and the tree service pulls up. Here's a little hint, tidbit for you. Go over and peek into the back of the truck. If that truck is empty and has nothing in it, and then they're about to do a job in your neighborhood, take down a couple of pine trees, maybe an oak tree or what have you, you know exactly what's going into that truck. You don't see, you know, if the truck's already half full with stuff, you're not sure what's in there. There could be a bunch of limbs and maybe some cans and who knows what, you know, what where they just removed whatever they removed. But not necessarily that it's bad. You still might luck out and get some real good wood chips out of that. But just a trick of the trade there. But if they pull in and that truck's about empty, and you see them taking down pine trees in your neighborhood, and they put them in that chipper, and it chips right into the back of that truck, you know what you're getting. You know what you're getting. That's perfect if you can do that. So ask them. Say, hey, I was wondering what you're going to do with those wood chips. I'd love to have them. In most all cases, they'll be more than happy to come dump them in your driveway, okay? And they're free. And here's another good advantage to that is that they've only been run through the chipper once. A lot of times, wood chips for homeowner use, they'll take those same chips, run them through the chipper again to make them smaller, and then sometimes they even color them red or black or green or whatever. Of course, you don't want that. But these chips, they've just been run through the chipper once, so they're bigger. They're bigger chips, which means it's going to take longer for them to biodegrade. How awesome is that? So, free. You can't beat free. So that's what we do about three times a year. And here's one more thing to be aware of. My neighbor did this up in Atlanta. She wanted free wood chips. She contacted a tree service. They came by and they dumped a full truckload of chips right in her driveway, right in front of one of her garage doors. And it was about 2 months before she could get her car in. Thank goodness her car wasn't in there, but before she could utilize that, because there was a lot of wood chips. And she was going around to neighbors, please come take some of these. Please come take some of these. I have too many. Please take them. So it was several weeks before she could utilize that garage door, and they just dumped them right in the front of her driveway. And she didn't need quite that many. So just a couple of tidbits there. If the truck pulls up and it's empty and you see they're cutting down some pine trees, oak trees, what have you, you know what you're getting, you know what's in there, it's great. If it's already three quarters full, you're not sure where that came from, so you're not sure of the quality or what kind of trees it came from, or if there's bottles or cans in there, if they're doing some highway work. So just that's a trick of the trade there. And also just beware if you don't have a place to put them, or you can maybe put a cover over them or a tarp, and you don't need that many, you're going to get basically, I think it's just a full truckload is what they'll deliver in most cases. They won't do a half truckload. You get what you get. So then we'll take those wood chips and they will go and spread those out maybe four inches deep of wood chips throughout the run. And get all those down in there, and then pack those down a little bit, spread them out with the metal rake, and you are good to go. And literally about three times a year we'll do that to that extreme during our maintenance program. If not, at least twice a year, once the spring gets here, once this fall gets here to get ready for the winter, and sometimes even a third time throughout the year. And it works absolutely wonderful. That's what we do. Others do other things. A lot of people will use a heavy sand and do a lot of sand in their run. I recommend if you're going to use sand for anything, whether you use grit or to mix it in with your run to get good drainage, to don't use the white play sand. It's actually heavy in sodium. Don't ask me why. I'm not a geologist, but the white play sand that you get is heavy in sodium. So if you can, if you have a choice, and I don't know what's more expensive or less expensive, but to get river sand, because that would be a better option if you're going to use that actually in your run and have a kind of a sandy run. Maybe you're going to use your run like a litter box. I know some people have done that, where they just go out almost daily or every other day and just scoop poop like they would a cat litter box. And they'll scoop the chicken poop out of there and put it in their compost bin, and they'll have a nice sandy run. So you're absolutely welcome, Mike. No problems at all. You're very welcome. That's what we're here for, is to educate and spread the love about backyard chickens and all the benefits. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well today. You're absolutely welcome. That's what this show's all about. We hope you can come back on a regular basis and tell all your friends about the show and how we, again, you don't listen to me yap every show. We have special guests that come on a regular basis on their assigned days and share their expertise about their specialty. So just like every Monday, we have Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, come on. And a couple of times a month, like today, we've got Arlena comes on, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. So we've got that going on. I want to share with you, so that's basically, now, as far as, in, one thing not to use in your run, this comes from experience and making the mistake myself, especially if it's not covered. If you have an outside run area, please do not use wheat straw or hay. You will regret it. You will be kicking yourself. You will hate it to the depths of the earth because what will happen... I think someone had messaged me about just they bought coarse sand. It's not the white play sand per se, labeled, you know, like some bags are marked play sand.
And a lot of the white play sand is high in sodium. If it just says coarse sand, like I said, it may not have the sodium content. I'm not saying it's going to kill your birds. That's just, and I'm going to be honest, I think I got that information from Dr. McCray, poultry scientist, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure if you just bought a bag that says coarse sand, if that's going to be technically the play sand, or if it's just good old, you know, and it may not be river sand, but river sand I understand is the best. Maybe just the good old labeled coarse sand would be next, and the white play sand is the no-no so for that. So thanks for sending me over that message. Okay. Oh, no hay and no wheat straw in the run because it's going to get rained on. And I'll tell you my experience with this. I had a TV crew coming out, and like it was short notice. Hey, we're coming out in the morning. Okay, you know, let me just spruce the place up a little bit. If I'm going to be on camera here. And I went out and said, you know, okay, I don't have time to get the wood chips like I, you know, normally do, and I probably didn't need it, but, you know, for TV. This was a long time ago. I mean, this was probably 4 years ago when we did this one. So I went out and got some wheat straw from the Home Depot, came out, it looked nice, and the chickens like scratching through it, and it looked good for TV, but we got about 3 days of rain, okay, and then it all packed down, and then it started getting moist, and it got mildew, and it got smelly, and it started to mold. And it started to get rank. And then when you try to remove it, because it's all wet and packed down, it's backbreaking labor, scooping that up and putting it in the wheelbarrow and getting it out of there. It was horrible. So in your coop, in your nesting boxes, hay, wheat straw, shavings, wood chips, go for it. Okay. Outside in the run, please no hay. Please no hay and no wheat straw, because it is, oh my gosh, you will regret it. It'll get nasty, and it'll just start stinking and mildew, spread disease, then trying to get it out of there, because it's not fun at all, folks. So not outside in the rain regarding that. So please keep that in mind. I want to read you something that we posted on our Facebook page yesterday. I met this wonderful family at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival, and their story is getting some media over there. They are located in Alabama, and I just want to read through this for you, because it just amazes me. It kind of shows the ignorance of people when it comes to keeping backyard poultry. Now, I don't think being ignorant is necessarily a bad thing based on how it's used, because let me explain something. No matter how many times you explain to me, I'm ignorant on how a big 747 jet can fly through the air or even get off the ground. I just, you know, you can explain the shape of the wing and forget it. I'm ignorant on that. I could not tell you. I could not rebuild my car engine, okay? Whether it's a 1983 Ford straight six, 300 straight six, or if it's one of these newfangled Mercedes smart engines, I couldn't rebuild that if I wanted to. Okay, so I'm ignorant on how an engine specifically may run and how to rebuild that sucker, how to rebuild a car transmission. I don't know how to do that. So, yeah, sure. Am I ignorant on that? Sure. Just like some people may be ignorant on the whole backyard poultry movement and what we're really talking about when we talk about six backyard chickens. Okay, they hear chickens and they think, you know, commercial chicken house that they ride through the country and see in the summer after it rains and it stinks. So our job, again, when we travel around the country, is to educate these folks on what we're really talking about. So I'm going to share this story with you. It came from AL.com, obviously short for Alabama.com, but AL.com. I met this wonderful family at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival. Here's the title of the story. 32 neighbors petition against. It's the first time I've heard of this. 32 neighbors petition against Jasper family's chicken coop. Owner says he checked in advance with the city. And this, of course, was picked up by the Associated Press. So here's the 32 of their neighbors petitioned against a Jasper, Alabama family's chicken coop. Owner says he checked in advance with the city. So let me read you the story. It's amazing. Listen to some of the comments from these people. Just makes you want to shake your head. Jasper, Alabama. Bain and Melissa Searcy, I probably destroyed their last name, I apologize, even though I just met you. Bain and Melissa Searcy hoped having six egg-laying chickens in the backyard would teach their two boys something about responsibility. The project has been more of a civics lesson than anything else, however, and they're doing this on a 4-H project, by the way. Several weeks ago, a zoning administrator told Bain Searcy that the family's chickens are a violation of the city zoning ordinance. Speaking at the city council work session, Searcy said he was confused because he called City Hall 8 months ago and spoke with a city clerk before building the coop or purchasing the animals. Searcy said the clerk reviewed the city's ordinance with him over the phone, and they both agreed his chicken coop would be lawful. According to the city's ordinance, the only stipulations are that the chickens must be kept in an enclosure, not running at large. "We've done this," he said. "I was told I was fully within the city ordinances and allowed to do this." The administrator that visited Searcy, however, said his chickens were in violation of a zoning ordinance, which is different from the city ordinance regarding livestock. City planner Keith Pipe explained the zoning ordinance at the session, saying residents must qualify as a hobby farm to possess chickens. According to the measure, hobby farms must be at least 5 acres and have 8,000 square feet of property for every 20 chickens. The chicken coops must also be built 100 feet away from any adjacent lot. Searcy said his family's project is not a hobby farm, and he believes the ordinance does not prohibit pet chickens. He also said he does not understand how a city ordinance can conflict with a zoning ordinance. City Attorney Russ Robertson said the laws are exclusive from one another, and residents must follow both. A number of communities have brought into movement toward backyard chickens, including Auburn, Alabama, and Nashville, Tennessee, citing benefits including fresh eggs. "You have to comply with more than one law, and perhaps that's confusing. That's a fair criticism," Robertson said. "Perhaps it's capable of other criticisms, but every activity in the city is governed by the zoning ordinances." The Searcy's neighbors, Dot and Ray McAdams, have a petition signed by 32 residents in the family's neighborhood who are opposed to the chicken coop. Ready for this? The Searcy's neighbors, I don't know if that's next door neighbor or somewhere in the community or in the subdivision, but the Searcy's neighbors, Dot and Ray McAdams, have a petition signed by 32 residents in the family's neighborhood who are opposed to the chicken coop. The petition included the signature of Morris Studdard, the Jasper County City Council member who represents the Pinecrest neighborhood. The McAdams said they are concerned that by allowing the Searcy's chicken coop, city leaders would set a precedent that would lower property values in the area. Okay, I'm just pausing there for a minute so I can hear all the moans and groans out there. Okay, I'm going to repeat that. The McAdams said that they are concerned by allowing the Searcy's chicken coop, city leaders would set a precedent that would lower property values in the area. Oh, really? Really? Okay. I'm going to contact them. I'm going to ask them, can you show me the proof? Show me the proof. Show me the proof. Show me the proof. I have been traveling the country for 5 years. I have been begging for this information on every media outlet known to man. There is no proof anywhere in America, and I'm saying it again today, there is no proof anywhere in America that we have been presented with where a person received less for their home they were selling because a neighbor kept backyard chickens or because the city that they were selling their home in allowed backyard chickens. I've been begging for this proof for years. It does not exist. They can't present it. They can't come up with it. They can't submit it. It does not exist. They are worrying about something that absolutely does not exist. Worrying about property values regarding this case would be like worrying that the chickens would grow to be 15 feet tall and crush their cat. It just does not exist. It's a moot point. Okay? Ready for this? If we started allowing this, people might start increasing the size of the coops, and the city would never know without someone policing this, Dot McAdams said. Ready for this? Dot McAdams said she's worked for the City Hall. Dot McAdams said she worked for City Hall in 1946. And so Dot McAdams worked for the City Hall back in 1946, and she can remember a time when chicken coops were popular within the city limits. Ready for this? This is going to make you laugh, and it might even make you cry, but it'll definitely get you angry and shake your head. Dot McAdams also says, "I just don't see us going back to those days," she said. "I just feel like we have a progressive city, and we want to see it go forward and not backward." Okay? That's Dot McAdams' comment. "I just don't see us going back to those days," she said. "I just feel like we have a progressive city, and we want to see it go forward and not backwards." Melissa Searcy said her family doesn't view the chickens simply as poultry. The animals are pets, and their children learn by taking care of the birds. "A lot of our children are no longer attached to that association of a homestead or having the responsibility of taking care of animals and seeing that animal go through and have a process in caring for that animal, whether it be egg production or having a litter of kittens," she said. Melissa Searcy also said her family wanted to stop buying heavily processed eggs from factory farms that keep chickens in deplorable conditions. She told council members that backyard chickens are a growing fad among people who favor sustainable living and organic foods. "I feel like this petition is an assault on our lifestyle," she said. City council members said they need to look further into the matter before making a decision. And that is the end of the story. So I posted that on our Facebook page. If you want to take a look at that and read that and even maybe comment on it, just go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. Absolutely crazy, is it not? Oh, my goodness gracious. So that's the deal there. I just had to read that one to you. Also, last night I posted a poll, a backyard chicken poll, about another town that is looking to allow chickens. And I have some chickens in the news I'll post after the show about two towns that now have allowed backyard poultry. Again, continuing across the country with successful laws and successful towns that are changing their laws to allow backyard poultry. I'll report on our Facebook page after the show. Two more cities out there that have approved the backyard poultry in their area. So how cool is that? It's very good. Yeah, I have to believe the city is about to get the wrath of Andy. Oh, me pickle fish. Yeah, really, I almost put down there. I said, looks like I'm going to have to make a trip back to Alabama. But I can't comment right now, but the family told me some of the things that the council's doing, and it's just absolutely horrendous. Really not up to par. So it really made me mad when I talked to them the other day at the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival about what the city was doing and the lengths they were going to embarrass this family. And they said that they were calling them backwards and rednecks and white trash and all this stuff because they kept, like, backyard chickens. And that's about all the detail I'm going to go through. But that was firsthand from this family that this news article was about. So they do definitely need a education, and they need the education kind of slapped across their face real quick. And so we'll just have to do it. Yeah. Pretty crazy. So very good. Let's go over here to the switchboard. It is now time. Of course, it is the third Wednesday of the month, which means it's Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Just wanted to share that with you folks because it kind of got hot under my collar reading that. Thought it would you as well. Let's go to the phone lines right now, and we will bring on Arlena Schott with GardenWise Living with Arlena. Today's topic is going to be planting a perennial garden. Arlena, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, almost afternoon. I understand you're being a little hot under the collar over that one. Yep, there's lots of things being said that's amazingly untrue. So more good for you there, Andy. Yeah,
absolutely crazy.
It's crazy.
What's that here in the background? Hang on, here we go. Is that you popping the cork?
Actually, I'm going to pour a glass. Cork is already popped, and in this wine, it doesn't actually pop. It's a corkscrew. Today, I'm actually savoring a sparkling perry, which is a Cedar Creek Winery. From Cedar Creek Winery, actually, it's Waterfall Riesling. It's a light, semi-dry white wine, but it has intense apricot and pear flavors, just so I get a little bit more intense with you there. Now, are you surprised? Geez, I can talk wine. Anyway, it's delicious, it is my first glass of the day, so don't anybody panic out there. We're good.
Your first glass of the day. Now, is it sound sweet? It's a sweet wine?
It's a sweet wine. It's called Waterfall Riesling. It's from Cedar Creek Winery here in Cedarburg, Wisconsin. I picked it up on one of my travels this last week, speaking about miniature gardenings. And so it's wonderful. Really, it's light. It's semi-dry. It's a white wine. It's really good. And you can really taste the pear and the apricot in it. So it's really a nice, soft wine. It's perfect for a sunny day here in Wisconsin, zone 4-5.
Cool.
And rain. We've had rain all morning, which is nice. The hostas say yay. The perennials say yay, because it has been bone dry. As my husband would say, it's drier than a popcorn fart outside. So, yes, it's wonderful to have some nice rain showers, and it's been really, really nice. So we're excited. But today, after your wonderful talk there, it really, really did throw me in a loop as well. It's amazing how many times I still hear it, and I cannot believe it when they talk about chickens lowering the price of property.
Yeah.
Don't mind the cars parked in the front yard or anything. Don't mind that.
No.
Just worry about a couple feathered friends wandering about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the junk cars. It's just crazy. I mean, you're absolutely right. So that's just one I wanted to share with us while we were waiting for you to call in. Mm-hmm. Bard Rock wants to know, he's ready to go outside and plant tomatoes, but he's not sure what wine is appropriate for planting, red wine or white wine for planting
white
tomatoes.
White wine. I love to mix white wine with planting tomatoes. It gives you such an airy feel as you go along barefoot in the soil, carrying your wine glass about, talking to the plants and the critters. Yes, white wine. So definitely go with white wine. I said popcorn fart. Yes, it's drier than a popcorn fart. And if you could think about how the popcorn farts, it'd be dry. So yes, sweet potato, I said popcorn fart.
There you have it.
Actually, Bard Rock, yes. So go ahead and grab a bottle of white wine to plant your tomatoes. That's what I would do. Mm-hmm. And barley wine is good as well. I see Woodcutter has got a glass of barley wine. What sort of wine goes with beer? I don't have enough wine. That's what goes with beer. That kind of wine. Anyway, yeah, so that's what we have today. We have just a nice little soft wine, and we're just going to have one glass. So don't totally get upset with me, because it's almost noon here, so we're good.
Just one. I know that's not going to happen, because I know when we go to commercial break, you'll pour one more, and then we'll go to another commercial break, and you'll pour one more. But that's okay. That keeps the show lively. We're all for that.
It keeps it lively, and that's what we're all about, keeping things lively and excited and inspire people to get out and garden. And that's wonderful. So that's what we're all about here. Well, today's show, and I don't know if you want to just get right at it, but we're going to talk about planting a perennial garden. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So if you've been interested in planting a perennial garden, I thought we'd go through some really simple, quick, not get real so technical so everybody goes, No, we're just going to keep it fun. We're going to keep it exciting, and hopefully we'll get some answers in there or questions in there that we can give some answers and help some people out this spring. Because here in Wisconsin, it's just starting to kick. I know y'all are way ahead of us, but up here in the north country of Wisconsin, we're at zone 4-5, and hostas are just diving out of the soil right now. Perennials are just starting to peek out, so it's really a great time if you're thinking about planning a perennial garden to start watching for those wonderful perennials in your garden centers. So first things first, what I like to do, because I am a landscape designer, that's what I do for a living, that pays the bills, I know. We all work hard, we have our jobs, and then we have this, right? No, and then, so when I go to a client's house, and she invites me over to give her some ideas or do a design for them and then come in and install it, and she wants a perennial garden. Well, the first thing I ask them to do is to ask themselves, what is the purpose of this garden to me? What is the purpose? And the purpose to me would be, do I want a place to sit and read a book? Do I want a splash of color to break up the lawn and all that green? Or in another case, if you have a xeriscape area, do I want a splash of area of color to break up the xeriscape, which in our terms of xeriscape yard is area that is mostly pebbles and stone and brick paths and things like that. But if you thought, okay, we have our xeriscape in, but we can probably afford to water just a little fine area of perennials, then, okay, let's put in maybe a splash of color there. Do I want a garden that I can see from the living room or where I'm doing dishes? That's what I mean by purpose. Plan the purpose of the garden, because then that helps you with these other plans that we're going to talk about. So your purpose, that's the number one thing. Now, size and shape. Once you have your purpose, you can say, okay, I want to plant a beautiful perennial garden so when I'm doing my dishes, I can see out the front window and see that, or I can see out the kitchen window and see that. Well, then, how big of an area do I have to plant? Stand right there in that area. Look right out where you're looking, even if it's in the living room, if it's going to be out the front window, and actually look from that perspective and say, I want to be able to see it while I'm sitting on the couch. I want to be able to see it while I'm reading a book. I want to be able to see it from my patio. So sit down on the patio. Get into that space, because then you know the size and the shape and everything else for it. Then you could think about whether I want it flat. So is there something beyond that garden that I want to see? So I definitely don't want to plan my perennial garden to where it's going to block the view of whatever's past that, say my chicken coop, or the neighbor's chicken coop, or the neighbor's swimming pool. I don't know. That would just be you, Andy, not me. Anyway, so maybe I don't want to block the area I want to see. So then I'm going to plant my perennial garden that is flat, because I want to see what's beyond it. But maybe I really don't want to see what's beyond it, like Andy's backyard and him and his wife in their underalls. Then I would do more of a raised garden bed. I'm not going to let you jump in here, Andy. I'm just not doing it.
No problem. I'm taking notes. I got some just need to plant coming up soon.
Oh, cool. So then you would think, okay, now I want to hide what's back there. Maybe there's a fence, or somebody in your neighbor had torn down a bunch of trees or shrubs, which happens quite often, and I get calls with some customers that say, now what do I do? Well, we can put a raised bed in there. We can bring in soil and bring that bed up higher, so that when we do put our plants in, it even is higher yet, and it kind of gives you a little soft cushion without putting in a hardscape fence, I call it, of a perennial bed that actually acts as a privacy. So that's raised. What about layered? Layered also works as a privacy, plus then you can bring it down to a lower level so you can see what's beyond it, and you can kind of make it to your own kind of puzzle to where I want to see that, but I don't want to see that. So we'll do a layered perennial garden, which may entail some boulders for lifting the soil, or some logs, or if you get real into specifics of it, you may want to involve maybe a little small retaining walls, totally up to what you want to do, with paths, little vignettes on the upper end, upper level that you can walk up to, sit and read your book. So there's the basics of it. I call it the bones of the whole structure of the garden. That's where you have to start. You have to start with the bones to get your I better get a glass of wine. I'm getting running out of I got a drink. Here, we got to take a sip because we're getting dry. It's the bones of the structure of the garden, the bones of the garden. That's your planning part, is your purpose, your size and shape, and then, you know, size and shape. Like I said, the flat, the raised, the layered, the round, the teardrop shape, long and straight. Some people are long and straight people. Some are curvy people. Some are round people. Just depends on what you want, and it's what your purpose is for that garden. Then you might want to pick edging. Now, I myself prefer my hosta beds up front. My big hosta beds have no edging. I go from hosta soil. I have my garden beds, my hosta beds are soil to grass. And then I just use my handy-dandy little tiny miniature little most wonderfulest in the world little Honda tiller. It's teeny, teeny, tiny one. to work those weeds in maybe 2 to 3 times a year at the very most. And that's how I keep my edge back of my lawn from creeping in. Now, you may choose not to do that. You may choose to actually put a formal border in. And formal border, I mean by either A, we can put brick edging in, which is called an interlock brick edge, which I absolutely love to use because it allows no maintenance. It's in permanently. It's easy to install, and it looks very, very structured. So if that's what you're looking for in your purpose of your perennial garden, then that's what I would suggest. Or a little more expensive and a little more time-consuming brick edging is than the all-time favorite is that black commercial edge. And I say commercial because I don't go to the big box stores and purchase that little rolled-up black edge. If y'all did out there, that is, I'm not here to condemn. I'm just giving you my personal opinions. I use a commercial meaning heavy-duty, black commercial edge, which is at least 6 inches deep, 6 to 8 inches deep, that edging is, has a really nice big fat top on it, and it has stakes that are either metal. The ones I use are metal stakes to stake it down, and those are at least 12 inches long. So when I put those stakes in and that commercial edge in, it's not going anywhere. You can bump it against the lawnmower. You can brush up against with a snowblower. It's not moving. It may tear, but it's not going to move. I can guarantee it. So when you're thinking about edging, you want to remember, if you're going to put an edge in, put it in to where it's staying there, not 5 years later you've got your edge coming out of the ground, you've got your lawnmower that hits it, so now you've tore it up and now it's half in, half out, and it makes you angry, and that was the purpose of the whole thing, was to make you happier, not angry. So use a good commercial edging. If you cannot find it in the big box stores, usually the independent garden centers that have a landscaping crew will carry it, and it is usually comes in 20-foot length, which is awesome because then you have less splices, the splices to where they come together, and it really makes a nice-looking edge, and it's very, very convenient and easy, and they will sell it to you. So get a hold of your landscapers. Those are the ones who will know where to get this commercial edging, not that little tiny 5-inch stuff that's rolled up in a box. Mm-hmm. And when you lay it out, it just coils back up on you. Hey, I've got a great tip, though. If you do, in fact, purchase a black edging that's been coiled up too long and will not uncoil as you're trying to lay it out, pull it out in the sun on a hot day when the full sun out, lay it down, put some stones on the beginning, middle end, lay it out to where something's holding it down, and let it lay in the sun. That plastic will absorb the heat and will start to flatten out for you, and then it's much easier to use than trying to play with a rubber band all day long. So there's my tip for the day. So we have commercial edge, or we have brick edging, which is my favorite. Any kind of that interlock brick edging is my favoritest. Just remember on brick edging, another tip for you here. When you go to tamp it in, use a piece of wood and a rubber mallet. Don't use a hard-nosed hammer. It will break it. And be very, very gentle with what I call the fins, which is the concave area of it, would be the female end and then the male end. When the male end comes into the female end, Andy, just stay in your chair. Be quiet. I hear you. Then make sure when you're tamping it, you do not break off those fins that house that male end or the male end, because that's like my favorite pet peeve in the universe, and it happens a lot. It's cement. So when you get carried away and you're going along and putting that edging in and you're tamping a little too hard, you'll end up with 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 without fins on them, and then you're in trouble. So just be very gentle with those fins area, the fin end, and use a piece of wood and a rubber mallet to tamp those in. And, you know, I was at a garden. Y'all know I already have ADD, so you're just going to have to keep up, okay? I was at a speaking event in Chicago this last weekend, speaking on miniature gardens at an independent garden center. Imagine that. And I had a gal start talking a little bit about putting in brick edging and this and that, and she was so upset because she had, I can't understand why I can't keep my my brick edging from breaking off and this and that. And so we had to talk a little bit about using a rubber mallet versus a hatchet end. Hello? Don't do it. Don't use a metal hammer. Use a rubber mallet and a piece of wood that's long enough to kind of take a lot of that vibration from that brick edge. And so that was like a really good eye awakener for me. But anyway, she also was thinking that you had to put a trench in and then put gravel, pea gravel in it. And I'm like, what? Why would you do that? Just dig out as deep as you think that brick is, because you want virgin soil. That soil. Yes, you do. You want that soil to be as virgin as possible, so when you tamp in your bricks, it's resting on virgin soil. So then it doesn't sink or leave. So try not to dig out too much. Don't get in there with your rototiller, Andy, and dig up a 14-foot swath about 4 feet deep and expect that brick to stay on the soil. It's not going to work. No, it won't work. So anyway, there's some tips on those edgings. That's what I like to use. Actually, I literally flat do not have any edging in my yard at all. I have all brown beds or beds, soil up to grass, and I use my little tiller to keep the grass at bay. Sometimes it works, sometimes I have to get in there and really dig it out, but most of the time it works pretty well. Okay, now we've gone from purpose, shape, size, and edging. Now let's get into, now we've got all that hammered out. There's our structure. What about lighting? That's probably the next step, because that's a step prior to buying plants. So we need lighting. Is it in full sun, part shade, shade? What's the lighting? That determines what kind of plants you're going to be purchasing. If I look at my front yard and I say, okay, it's all shade up till 1 o'clock, 12 o'clock, excuse me, 12, it's all shade, but then 1 o'clock or noon, it starts getting sun. That's called full sun to me. Most of your plants you want to plant in those areas would be plants that will take hot day sun, because obviously we have hot day sun right there. Now look in my yard and you say, okay, I have sun right now, but then it stops at noon. To me, that's partial shade. That's awesome. That is like heaven for us gardeners. We have at least enough sun during the day, but then we have afternoon shade to cool it down. So that's part shade. So we want to remember that as well for plants. Now, what if I have sun from sun up to 10, then it's shade till noon, then it's sun from noon to the rest of the day? What is it, Andy? You're not winning.
Afternoon sun.
It's afternoon sun, but it's full sun to me, because the answer is full sun to me, because it is that hot afternoon day sun. So you wouldn't want to put sunny perennials in that area, even though you had 4 or 5 hours of shade during the day, but that's the cool part of the day you have shade. But the rest of the day is all sun. That's considered full sun to me. So you want to remember that. Now put that down, Andy. Jeez, you didn't win the prize.
Yeah. Just a bottle of bubbly.
A bottle of bubbly. So anyway, so now you just want to make sure. Now shade is shade. Shade is, if I have full sun, if I have sun in the morning from sun up to 10 o'clock or 11, and then shade the rest of the day, that's shade to me.
Okay.
Because it's shade in the hot sun. If I have shade from sun up to 10, then it's sun from 10 to noon, but then it's shade the rest of the day, that's pretty much shade. You know, that's those shade plants can handle that. They like that.
Okay.
And if I have obviously shade all day, that's shade. That's easy, huh? I should ask you that one. Then there's dappled shade, which hostas absolutely entirely love. That in the whole universe is hostas love dappled shade. Dappled shade is where it's there's trees in the bed to where the sun, you know, just dapples the little sunspot on them, all in the soil or all over the soil. There's just little dapples. And dapples, you know what a dapple is? A dapple. Dapple is it's about as big as a golf ball or a baseball or a golf ball size sun that peeks through. Those are dapples. That is a professional word designed by nobody. It's called dapple. That's dapple sun. And most of your perennials that prefer shade love dappled shade because then they get a little bit of the both, and that just is wonderful for them.
Okay.
All-day shade is tough. That is really, really, really tough on plants. All-day shade. Most plants, even if they say I'm a shade plant, would prefer to have a little dappled sun or a little, at least a couple hours of sun during the day on the cool day, you know, cool side. Morning sun, like a couple, 3 hours, and then shade the rest of the day. Perfect. That is like a gardener's dream, and I'm toasting to that because we look for that all the time. Okay, now we've got past the light and the full sun, shade, all kinds of stuff. And that the purpose is, what is the purpose? We're having a perennial garden. So now we know whether or not we have full sun, part shade, whatever, or shade. Uh-huh. So we know the plants that we need to choose.
Yep.
So if you're thinking about perennial plants, now that totally is the way I look at it is this. I like levels. Do you want levels in your garden? And that would depend on, okay, what kind of plants you're going to put in would depend on what you chose for your size and shape, whether it's one-sided or whether it's you can see it from all directions around the garden or whether you can, exactly, either it's one-sided or all the way around. I guess there aren't any other ways to look at it. If you have a one-sided garden, which a lot of us may have because of we're putting it up next to the boundaries of the property line or up against a structure or up against a waterfall, in your case, your chicken coop, then we want to put our higher perennials in the backside and our lower perennials in the front, and then look at a medium perennial for the center. Knowing that perennial means what, Andy? Perennial. That's the way I remember it. Perennial is two words. That means it comes back more than once. Perennial. Two words. Annual is one word. Absolutely one word. Annual means it's once. But there can be an annual that is a perennial, but it actually is an annual. Ha ha. But you know why? It receives itself.
Yep.
And comes back from seed. Those are actually annuals that reseed and not considered a perennial because that original plant will not be there, but its little seed babies will be scattered about the garden. So there are those differences there. Perennial, annual, then there's biannual like foxglove that only blooms for it blooms after 2 years. Oh, I'm just so confused. But anyway,
Two questions in the chat room before I forget. Somebody asked what would be a good perennial to plant around their septic system. True, honest question. And then number two, they asked a question of what are some perennials that actually like full sun?
Okay, let's get to those. Let's do those. Okay, I have been asked many, many times to design a little area for a septic system. And what I do, because we're mowing, correct? Most of us mow unless it is a zero-scape yard. We do have – what I do is I put in a bed around it, not just right up next to it, but I'll put a bed in around it so that we can mow around it easily, which means we're going to take care of that a little bit better. And then what I do is I'll put a solid structure in. For instance, depending on your zone and where you are at, I'm talking 4-5 here. I love spireas in my spot. For structure, I put a couple shrubs for structure, flowering shrubs, just a couple, or even a red osier dogwood for winter interest. That's a structure that something's going to be there forever, ever. Now, if you don't prefer to put in a structured plant, let's go with perennials like I love my daylilies. Yes, I saw that in the chat room. Daylilies are wonderful, but what I use are ever-blooming daylilies. Stella Dior's, there's Happily Ever After. There's the daylilies that aren't the old-fashioned ones that get tall and fall over and bloom for a month and they're done. These are the Stella Dior lilies or the Ever After lilies or continual blooming lilies. You can ask your garden centers. And those get up to 3 feet tall and 2 feet wide. They continually bloom. And I believe there's yellow now. There's an off-white cream. There's the old-fashioned Stella Dior, which is a kind of a golden yellow. Easy to take care of, easy to manage. They stay there forever, and they love you, blooming on and off, easy to take care of. In the fall, you hack them down, give them a haircut, or even midsummer if they're looking a little ragged, and they still love you. I also love my coneflowers, hardy perennials. What zone? First, what zone? And hoping you're in a zone that I know. But anyway, coneflowers, echinacea, I love them. Now, there are so many colors, and depending on your zone, if you're anything warmer than what I am, I have a tough time with some of my colors. So my old-fashioned coneflowers, the purples and the pinks do really well. The brandywines, imagine that. They, Merlots, they do really well for the color because they're like a maroon wine color. They do well. I have a tougher time with the red, oranges, and the yellows of the coneflowers, the new coneflowers. But if you're in any zone warmer than me, which I'm 4'5", so you'd be 5 or 6 or 7 or 8, then you can do a little bit better with those colors, and I love coneflowers. I'm a real old-fashioned perennial person, other than when you're getting into, like, the coral bells and things like that. Now, you said full sun, correct?
Yes.
Andy, full sun? Now, yep. A lot of people think coral bells are not full sun. I can guarantee you I have coral bells, which are heucheras, if I want to get botanical name, because I know there's all of you out there, some of you, know the botanical and only call it heuchera. I call them coral bells. And coral bells, they say on the tags, are part shade or shade plants. Yes, they will grow in part shade, and they will grow in shade. But they, in my opinion, do so much better with at least a half a day full sun. And then their colors pop. And coral bells are meant just for colors of leaves. They're purple, and they're maroon, and they're yellow, and they're lime, like a lime Ricky. There's a marmalade. There's just so many. It's like this big, huge palette of coral bell colors, and those are put in for the color of their leaf versus what they actually bloom like. So you can put those a little shorter. I'd put those up front, mix them with some really fun Stella Dior daylilies or the Happy After daylilies, a couple coneflowers. I could go on. Perennials are one of my – I'm up on perennials, so I love perennials. Coreopsis, yes, Coreopsis are always wonderful, wonderful, wonderful plants. Coreopsis come again in many – I could go on. Many, many, many colors nowadays. There's raspberry. There's – oh, goodness. There's yellow. There's an orange. There's yellow – I went yellow-white. There's yellow with brown centers. There's – oh, goodness. It's just amazing how many Coreopsis there are. There's thick-leaf Coreopsis. There's fairy-leaf Coreopsis. I call them fairy-leaf Coreopsis, but they're actually like a ferny leaf. Goodness, you could just go on and on and on. Perennials are absolutely one of my favorite things to play with. So those are some hardy ones. Now, don't get me wrong, because, goodness, we could go on and on. Delphiniums, irises. And again, that will take us right, that's a good segue, right back to what we were talking about as far as picking your plants. If you pick your plants for bloom time as well, because the one thing about perennials is they bloom, and most of them have a bloom time, and then they're done for the season. But if you pick plants that flower at different times, you can always have a splash of color throughout your perennial garden. And so choose things that bloom early spring. That's why I like to put a couple flowering bushes in there, because that gives me my early spring. Then my tulips and daffodils come up. Then I have my, oh, my goodness, then you start with your coral bells starting to come to life. Then your echinaceas and your chinchillas and your coreopsis bloom through the summer. And Stella Dior daylilies, they start blooming probably about the end of May, first week in June, more first week in June here, and go through the rest of summer. So now that I talk too fast, I know, I'm sorry. So anyway, there are so many wonderful perennials out there. I hope I helped with that. Was there another question that I missed?
No, Tracy Okor in the chat room said that she has tons of clematis growing all over her carport, and her sister came by, her sister-in-law came by and said that she just loved all the chlamydia all around her carport, and she said she she almost peed in her pants telling her that chlamydia is not a flower.
That's right.
Oh,
exactly.
Geez.
That is funny. I like it.
So,
there are lots of wonderful perennials. So that, and again, we're talking, that is probably when you're going to pick your plants, know your soil. That's another part of the plan, as well as the soil type. But if you're adding soil, then you can pretty much make it your custom blend. And then make sure you know whether it's sun or shade. And then your garden centers can help you with picking the plants that are correct for those areas. Or if you, like me, I love to drive around. And if I see a lady gardening or a gentleman gardening that has a wonderful garden and I admire, I have no qualm about popping in and asking her, what is that and what is that and what is that? Gardeners love, love, love to talk to other gardeners and love to show off. So,
how often do you split your hostas?
Terry Nick, I believe it is. Yep. How often should you split your hostas? Okay, perfect question. I have a huge, huge, huge hosta bed out front that's been in for 3-4 years. Now, you think about, you put your hosta in the first year. The second year, you look at them. The third year, they grow. The fourth year, they explode. The fifth year, you divide. So that's when you're putting baby hostas in, and I put baby hostas in. But if you have hostas that have a clump at least 2 feet across, you can take at least a third to two-thirds of that clump away and divide those up and put them other places without hurting it. You can actually dig the whole entire clump up, divide it into hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of baby hostas, and put them all around. Because as you can see, if your chromes are just starting to peep out of the ground like mine, I can actually stand and count how many I could actually divide out of there and still have my mama plant. Knowing that the hybrid hostas are more difficult, they grow slower, like the big old monster leaf ones, or the big giant blue ones that I love so much, or the chartreuse green ones I love so much, you can divide those, but it takes longer periods of time. So what I do is I wait. And those you want to be more careful with. You want to actually dig up the clump completely, jiggle the soil off of it so that you can see the divisions so you don't destroy any because they're so valuable. And then you can take a shear or a little shovel and divide those out softly. Now, if you have humongous clumps like they've been in for 4, 5, 6 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, and they're just really massive, I get right in there with a shovel, and I just start digging big clumps out or small clumps, depending on how much work you want to do, and then just leave all the way around one clump of plants so that they can continue to grow, and then you have harvested so many, and they get healthier that way because they don't have to compete with all those other roots. See what I mean? And then add a whole bunch of more good soil back to fill in the holes where you took them out. I hope I helped with that. Geez, yeah. I just get off on this really tangent, don't I? Anyway, any other questions?
Woodcutter Ron says that you need to do a show on planting grapes and home winemaking.
Yes, we do. Barefoot even. I think we did talk about grapes one time, or planting grapes. We could do it again. We could absolutely do that again because it's almost time. Actually, here in Wisconsin, it's just about time to start putting our grape plants in. So, yeah, asparagus is up, froze a couple times. It's still good. Rhubarb has gotten nipped. Everything here has pretty much gotten nipped pretty bad. What kind of ferns grow well in those zoned 5, dapple shade? Terry Nick. Zone 5, that would be me, 4 or 5. If you go to, let's see, who's got some really, really nice ferns? There is a place, it's called Terra Nova. I'm typing. That's how I type. Terra Nova Nurseries. Terra Nova Nurseries. In, it's two words, sorry. Terra Nova Nurseries in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. I think they're in Canby, Oregon. It's a wholesale site, but it does have, it's a garden in the nursery that grows things. They're growers, breeders, amazing, amazing plants. If you go there, they have this huge, awesome display. Their pictures are like, you just want to lick their catalog when it comes. It's just amazing, the pictures they have. And they have such a nice listing of ferns that grow well. And if you want to, Tracy, I could, great idea on the wine and grapes, yeah. I could actually put together a list for you if you'd like for Zone 5, but they are wonderful, wonderful pictures there on that one. And I like the Christmas fern. I like the painted ferns. Here in Wisconsin, the painted fern does really well for us. We lose a lot in the winter if we don't have a good coverage here in 4 and 5, but if we get a good winter coverage, then they stay really well, especially dappled, like you said, dappled shade. You even know the term, dappled. You dappled. Yes. So if you would like, I could put together a really nice list that I like, or I could get you in touch with them, and they have, just go there on their website. Yes, there you go, Ralph. It is wonderful. It's like my favorite place in the entire universe to go when I go to the trade shows and I go to their booths, because they're here, I'm off on my thing again. Their catalogs, when they send me their catalogs, it's like you just take that catalog and you sit down and you have a glass of wine or five, and you just look at their pictures just to drool for. Their photographers are just amazing, and it's just awesome. So go to Terra Nova, check it out. They've got some wonderful information for home gardeners, because they're great people, and they all want us to succeed, and that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Cool. Hey, we're going to go to commercial break, but we will be back. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we are talking with Arlena Schott. Today is Garden Wise Living with Arlena. We're talking about planting a perennial garden, and we'll be back right after this short break. Stay with us. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink.
Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our scheduled guest today, of course, is Arlena Schott with Garden Wise Living. We're talking all about planting a perennial garden. And Arlena, welcome back.
Oh, sorry there. I was having a little sip. Thank you.
I told y'all, folks, we know that better. One glass, yeah.
Trying to pull over.
It's one glass per radio show segment. Let's put it that way. So she was part right.
Actually, ferns don't have tap roots per se, like milkweed, but they do have intense. They have like a chrome or a crown, kind of like that is their main root. But they hate to be disturbed. So when I say tap root, I mean. When I think about a taproot, it's like a pine tree out in the wild. When you usually try to dig up a pine tree, you have to go straight down and over rather than a shallow root, or you don't get that taproot and it dies. So a taproot as in its life root, as in a fern, like we were speaking on here that tall and suggest for plants. Bordered rock, that's funny. I like that. But a taproot, you're not a taproot. I can't even watch that and talk. A taproot to me is their lifeblood. For instance, in a fern, if you notice when your ferns go dormant, they'll have this kind of fuzzy, almost looks like a spider body, tarantula body, kind of top or chrome or crown that comes out of the soil. That is what I mean by their taproot. So when you're digging them out of the wild, you have to be sure to try to come out from the plant at least. In some places it's illegal. Come out from the chrome or the root ball body at least a foot, and then down and then across, so that you get a lot of that soil and don't disturb the hair roots that come from the taproot, so-called, of the fern. That's why they're so difficult to transplant. And same with wild asparagus, if you notice, if you've ever tried to do that. Same thing, because their roots, their lifeblood, are so long and leggy that a lot of us think, okay, we'll just zip, scoop it up. But we have to remember to get those taproots or the big root of the plants that we're trying to pilfer. Yeah, we're pilfering plants now. What have we come to? Yeah. How do you manage to stay out of jail? Oh, my gosh. That's too funny. So if there are any questions about planting perennials, that is like one of my loves. When I get a call from a gal who says, I want to put in a perennial garden, I'm like, yes, I love that. Another thing we could talk about, if you'd like, is renovating a perennial garden, or that could be a different show. But if we have time, we could talk. If y'all are out there and you have a perennial garden, but it's gotten, a little bit overgrown and just isn't blooming the way it used to in the past, she may just need to be disturbed a little bit. It's kind of like, when a lot of people tell me that my lilacs aren't blooming as much as they used to. Well, first thing I say is give them a haircut and disturb them and fertilize them. And disturb them, I mean by cut down in the soil and wake them up. And sometimes perennial beds need to be just disturbed a little bit. Grab a bottle of wine and a good shovel and just start digging around and see what you can find. Transplant, move, divide, you know, irises. Once their chromes or their roots get rhizomes, whatever they all want to call them. I call them roots. Get up to the top of the soil and are uncovered. Then they just kind of creep along and they tend to stop blooming. Start pulling them apart, replanting them around. You know, it's going to take a year or so, probably the next season before your bed gets back to its color again. But things, perennial beds love to be disturbed as far as maintained, as far as going through and transplanting and digging out and adding new and changing the soil up, adding fertilizer, adding compost, you know, adding things that can break down and provide nutrients. Hostas are one of the most things that love to eat. So they love organic matter. They have to be fed regularly. So look at your perennial garden as she's a living thing, or he is a living thing, and needs to be disturbed and slapped around every once in a while. Mm-hmm. We're slapping plants, too. Spirea, how do we prune back spirea? Awesome question. Well, spirea loves to be hacked down to the ground. Take her down to about 8 inches tall and let her go. If it's already leafed out, it doesn't matter. Spirea will come back prettier as pretty as before. If it's winter time still where you are at, or springtime here where my spireas are just starting to bud and you forgot to trim them last fall, you can do it now. Pick them up, give them a haircut. This summer, if they start getting out of hand and start creeping into your golden spirea or creeping over into your iris or creeping onto the walk, pick them up, give them a haircut. They are one of the woody flowering shrubs that love to be slapped about and given haircuts so that they wake up to attention and send up new sprouts from the center. There you go. Do it anytime. Anything else? So, Andy, what kind of perennials are you going to be planting?
Daylilies.
Yes, I love daylilies. They're beautiful.
And as soon as they come out to bloom, I get to go down and pick out whatever kind that I want. My neighbor has a huge, huge field of them. And so he said, hey, come on down and pick out whatever you want. I'm going to be putting them on a bank along the road just on the outside of our new fence. So definitely looking forward to that. Yep. Awesome. Got to do that.
Yes.
Well, it is time for our – go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, especially where you guys are all at, they just grow wonderfully there.
Absolutely fabulous, and they come up and bloom for quite a long time, and I can't wait to get to do that and plant that. So, yeah, absolutely, Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's time for our contest today, so we've got a cool prize to give away, but tons and tons of information. But before you go, tell all of our listeners how they can follow you and become a fan and contact you and all that great stuff.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. You can come to Facebook. It's Arlena Schott, and that's my private page or my regular page. It's not private at all, believe me. But that's Arlena Schott. I'd love to be your friend. Or Garden Wise Living is a fan page. Also, we have a miniature and fairy garden chat group on Facebook. It's called Miniature and Fairy Garden Chat on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, and my Twitter handle, I guess you call it, I don't know, is at Green Blessings. And what else? LinkedIn, I'm in there. Arlena Schott. And Pinterest, I'm on Pinterest, Arlena Schott. And you can see my website at gardenwiseliving.com. Or if you just Google Arlena, there I am, Arlena Schott. So I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to see you. I'd love you to come around to the independent garden centers that I am speaking at across the United States about inspiring people to garden, and I'd love to see you there. Thank you so much, Andy, for having me, and don't you guys forget to garden wise.
Super. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in a couple more weeks.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us. All right. Awesome show, Garden. First and third Wednesdays every month here, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Again, mark your calendar. The first and third Wednesdays today was planting a perennial garden. How cool is that? You can always listen to the archive if you missed anything. And that is at, of course, iTunes, podcast.com, and Zoom.com. And, of course, right here on Blog Talk Radio, you can listen to the archives all the time. So very, very cool. Let's give away some prizes. We're going to take caller number 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Caller number 4. 347-637-3237. If you know today's early bird secret password, weren't here on time, shame on you. Today's early bird secret password, if you know it, caller number 4, 347-637-3237. Call right now. What's the prize? A wooden trough waterer from Ware Manufacturing. A wooden. A metal. Wooden. Yeah, right. Where am I going? A metal trough feeder from Ware Manufacturing, and I believe that's the 16-inch long, metal, galvanized metal trough feeder, 347. It's a brand-new product that they've come out with at Ware, and so we have a few actually to give away and get into your hands. So, caller number 4. Caller number 4, 347-637-3237. One more time, 347-637-3237. Call right now, call number 4. If you know today's early bird secret password, call number 4. You'll win this metal, galvanized metal trough feeder from Ware Manufacturing. Again, tomorrow we're hoping to have Dr. McRae, PhD, poultry scientist and professor, right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Tune in at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, again, no show this Friday because we'll have the TV crew from A&E out here doing some filming. So, got that. So, let's see. Midnight's is like, doggone it, I was listening the whole time, but I must have missed this early bird secret password. You had to have been here early. That's why it's called the early bird secret password. Had to have got here first thing, on time. Imagine that. Sweet Potato says, I thought I was here on time too, but I guess I missed it. Well, if you happen to miss the early bird secret password, well.
La 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 la.
Sorry about that. All righty, let's go to the phone lines. Caller number 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Call right now, caller number 4. If you know today's early bird.
Caller number 4, you're on the air calling in from area code 757. State your name. Tell us where you're calling from.
Tracy Ucroy from Virginia Beach.
Tracy from Virginia Beach. All right, caller number 4, congratulations. And what is today's early bird secret password?
Tractor.
It is tractor, absolutely. I could have got more detailed and said 1953 Ford Jubilee, but I didn't. I just said tractor. So, hey, thanks for joining us in the chat room. It was a hoot in there today, wasn't it?
That was hysterical. I really enjoyed it.
You gotta watch out for Ron. You gotta watch. Woodcutter Ron, you gotta watch out. Watch out for that crazy dude. But no, he adds a lot of life to the chat room. We appreciate he coming in every day, long time, a good listener. So we appreciate him and appreciate you as well. Now, to claim your prize, Tracy, just send me an email, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. Chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net. And then in the subject line, put metal feeder. And then I'll need your name, shipping address, phone number, and email in the email itself. Okay, so name, shipping address, phone number, and email. And just send me over an email. I'll get that over to Heather at Ware Manufacturing. They'll get that metal trough feeder for you as soon as possible. So we appreciate that. All righty, that's going to wrap up another show of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We really appreciate you tuning in. Want to say again, thank you to all the homeschoolers out there that tune into the show and add this to their curriculum on a daily basis. Thank you to all the over-the-road truck drivers that listen and listen to the archive. We thank you. And, of course, we thank all of the feed and seed centers all around the country that stream this radio show live for their customers. We appreciate that. Thank you also in the chicken chat room. Appreciate you coming in and joining us. And all the first-time listeners that come on, we hope you'll come on back every day, Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Really scheduled 12 to 1:30, but sometimes we'll run a little over and go to 2. So we thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We'll see you then, folks. Have a great day. Thank you.